This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief over at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 61 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I'm so confused by this Adrian Peterson trade and the reaction that it got from fantasy football owners. Like, how much more evidence do we need to show us that he's probably not very good at football anymore? Adrian Peterson hasn't rushed for 100 or more yards in a game since December of 2015. He's averaged more than 4 yards per carry in a single contest just twice since November of 2015. And now he's going to an offense that's seen some of the worst offensive line play in all of football to start this season. Like, sure, Adrian Peterson is Adrian Peterson, and he could perform, I guess. But literally every context clue says that Adrian Peterson probably won't thrive in Arizona. Let's not think that a 32-year-old playing a position of little importance in today's NFL is going to make a big impact in an offense. Let's not take our pants off for Adrian Peterson. If you have Adrian Peterson, you probably shouldn't be playing him in fantasy football this week. He's not one of my starter sits, though. I'll get to those in a second. First, I want to tell you about a really cool contest that you guys should participate in over on FanDuel. If you listen to this podcast, then you might have thought, this guy doesn't know anything. I could beat him in fantasy football. Well, now's your chance to prove it. Because every week after week 6, me, Brandon Gadula, and Jim Sonnes will be playing against FanDuel Friends Mode commissioners in the NumberFire Showdown. To qualify, just be a FanDuel Friends Mode League commissioner and have your contest run for cash. That gets you into the $1,000 commish free play next week. Finish in the top 3 in the free play, and you'll take on me, Brandon, and Jim the following week. If you win, you get $1,000 or more. But if one of us expert wins, we don't get anything. Instead, FanDuel adds $500 to next week's prize pool until a commish claims it. If you want to learn more about how you can play against me in this special FanDuel contest, you can visit FanDuel.com/NumberFireShowdown. That's FanDuel.com/NumberFireShowdown. All right, now let's talk some start sits. One of the easier calls at quarterback this week is to start Deshaun Watson. You know, regression is going to hit Deshaun Watson at some point. This season, he has an 8.3% touchdown rate. Over the last few years in the NFL, the average touchdown rate for a quarterback is 4.5%. In fact, Watson's rate is so high that it's only been hit 11 times in NFL history among passers with 200 or more attempts. So if Deshaun Watson were to keep up this pace, he'd be elite. He'd have an elite season. He'd have an outlier season, if we're being honest. So don't expect him to keep this up. But do expect him to post a very nice fantasy performance here in week 6. He's going to be at home, and he's facing a Browns defense that's now surrendered at least 13.5 standard fantasy points to every single quarterback that they've faced. And those quarterbacks that they faced have not been very good. They've gone up against Joe Flacco, Jacoby Brissett, Andy Dalton, and Josh McCown. The Browns have the second worst pass defense according to our schedule-adjusted net expected points metric at NumberFire as well. The Browns can't stop the pass. This is nothing new. I do want to say, too, just because the Texans are big favorites in this game doesn't mean that they'll just run the football. Running the football might make you think that Deshaun Watson will then be irrelevant in fantasy football. Just always remember, in order to get into that ultra-positive game flow, Deshaun Watson will have to perform. And given this matchup, he should be able to perform. And I think Kirk Cousins will as well. I like Kirk Cousins against San Francisco this week. You know, the first 2 weeks of the season were not great for Kirk Cousins, but that seems to be some sort of theme within his career. The last 2 seasons, during weeks 1 and 2, Kirk Cousins ranked 31st, 25th, 28th, and 14th in weekly quarterback scoring. This year, he finished 20th and 21st. Maybe that's a coincidence, maybe it's not. The thing that's important here is that Kirk Cousins has performed in his last 2 games. He scored 21-plus fantasy points in each of those contests, including one of those against a pretty good Kansas City secondary. Now he gets San Francisco. The 49ers secondary ranks 6th worst in football according to NumberFire's metrics, and it's one that's surrendered at least 13 fantasy points per game this season to opposing quarterbacks. I'll be honest though, in the back of my head, there is this negative that Kirk Cousins is going up against Kyle Shanahan. Kyle Shanahan knows Kirk Cousins. He might know how to scheme against Kirk Cousins. That's my fear. That's my only fear though in this game where Washington should win. Earlier this week on the 15 Transactions show, I mentioned Jacoby Brissett. I think that he's a decent, deeper play against Tennessee, especially if Marcus Mariota ends up playing. And I like Carson Palmer again this week against Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay, their secondary, not very good. On the flip side of things, I think that Jared Goff is a pretty bad start this week. I just want to throw some advanced numbers at you guys. I've already mentioned net expected points, which basically tells us how many expected points, real points, these teams or these players are adding for their team. If you're unsure about what net expected points is, I did a previous podcast with our chief analyst at NumberFire, Keith Goldner, that goes through the metric and why it's important. Net expected points is a better way of telling us what's going on a football field. It's looking at things like down and distance and field position to show how a team should perform versus how they actually perform. This season, a league average secondary, according to net expected points, and this is all schedule adjusted, has a defensive passing NEP total of 16.01. Now, it's not zero because passing is a lot more difficult to defend than rushing is. So a league average team has a defensive passing NEP total of 16.01. What that means is versus expectation, over the course of the entire season, they've allowed 16 more points than they should have. But that should have is actually in context of rushing as well. Basically, what I'm getting at is the Jaguars right now have an adjusted defensive passing net expected points total of minus 48.21. That's the best in the league. And that means that over the course of the season's five games, it's four games for some teams, I understand that, Jacksonville's secondary has prevented nearly 64 real points from being scored against them via the pass. And that's against an ordinary team. Because we're comparing this minus 48.21. They're taking away 48 points against an average of 16.01. That's almost 13 real points per game. The Jacksonville secondary is adding, essentially, for the team in total, 13 points per game so far this year. That's dominant, and that's translated to fantasy football. Quarterbacks against Jacksonville have, on average, scored 5.5 fantasy points per game. 5.5. That's the equivalent of a quarterback throwing like a 40-yard touchdown to start the game and then walking off the field and doing that every single week. There is absolutely no chance that I would be playing Jared Goff against this Jacksonville secondary this week. Speaking of the Jacksonville secondary, Ben Roethlisberger was destroyed by them this past week. And I don't like Ben Roethlisberger again this week. I'll say this, I think that it would be the most Steeler and Ben Roethlisberger thing ever to do what they did in week 5 and then go to Kansas City and beat the only undefeated team in football this week. The Steelers seem to do stuff like this every single year. The Steelers always beat teams that they shouldn't, aside from the Patriots, and then they lose the teams that they should beat. This is the Steelers under Mike Tomlin. But no, we should not count on something like that happening. Roethlisberger's home road splits are well documented. Over the last half decade on the road, he's averaged about 1.25 fewer touchdown passes per game and over 40 fewer passing yards. When he's away from Heinz Field, he's a risky start. But it's even more dangerous against Kansas City. They have an above average secondary according to our numbers, and they've faced good quarterbacks and they've mostly held them. You have Tom Brady that they've gone up against, Carson Wentz, Phillip Rivers, Kirk Cousins, and garbage time hero Deshaun Watson as well. So when you adjust for strength of schedule, Kansas City's secondary looks a lot better than it does in terms of fantasy points against. So I don't like Ben Roethlisberger this week, and I don't think you should either. You also should not be starting Eli Manning this week. My goodness, do not start Eli Manning against Denver. Eli Manning has no wide receivers, and Eli Manning is going up against one of the best secondaries in football. Do not play Eli Manning. And in shallower leagues, I think you can make an argument that you could bench Carson Wentz. Carolina's defense is strong. Carson Wentz on the road, Thursday night game. There's a chance that it gets a little bit ugly. At running back, someone who's going to benefit a lot from that Adrian Peterson trade this week and beyond is Mark Ingram. I think one part of this Adrian Peterson trade that's not being talked about enough is how fantasy owners are going to feel more confident playing someone like Alvin Kamara or Mark Ingram moving forward. Mark Ingram owners know what I'm talking about. In the back of their head, every single week when they're going to start Mark Ingram, they're thinking, what if this is a week that Sean Payton decides to play Adrian Peterson more? What if this is a week where Adrian Peterson sees all of the goal line touches? Guess what? Adrian Peterson's not there anymore. You should feel confident with Mark Ingram moving forward. Now, his matchup this week against Detroit is not a cakewalk. The Lions have allowed a success rate, or the percentage of positive expected point runs, to opposing rushers of just 28.3%. That's the ninth best in the league. By most metrics, the Lions have a top 10 rush defense in the NFL. But I think this is an important time to mention that the biggest thing that you want with running backs is volume. Matchups only do so much. Matchups only tell us so much. You want the potential for volume, you want the potential for a positive game script, and you want the potential for a lot of scoring. That's exactly what you have with Mark Ingram this week. He's now only sharing a backfield with Alvin Kamara, so there should be some volume. The Saints are a 5-point home favorite. There should be a positive game script. And there's a high 50.5-point over-under in this contest. There should be scoring. All of those combined make Mark Ingram a really good play this week. I like Elijah McGuire too, as long as Bilal Powell and Matt Forte are both out. You have to monitor that situation as the week goes on. Because if one of those guys are in, I would assume they'd be ahead of Elijah McGuire on the depth chart. But he's playing New England. New England has allowed the second most points to opposing running backs this season, and they've also surrendered the seventh most receptions to the running back position. Elijah McGuire had a great receiving market share profile coming out of college. Elijah McGuire profiled as a pass-catching back coming out of school. So at the very least, you have PPR upside with Elijah McGuire this week in what should be a negative game script against New England. But if Matt Forte and Bilal Powell are out, then he's going to see some early down work as well. Elijah McGuire is a great play if both those guys are out. But I do think that you can make the argument that he's a flex play if someone like Matt Forte ends up playing, because there could be a lot of volume through the air for him. Speaking of volume through the air, Shane Vereen is kind of interesting this week as a deeper play against Denver. We know the entire Giants passing attack is hurt outside of Eli Manning and Evan Ingram. That's basically all you have right now. Eli Manning is going to be going up against the Denver secondary with himself and Evan Ingram and Roger Lewis. What is Roger Lewis? New York is going to have a negative game script. If they don't have a negative game script, I will be shocked. If New York wins this game at Denver, I will be absolutely shocked. They're 12-point underdogs, and the chances are they're going to lose. We know Shane Vereen's upside or potential in fantasy football does not come from touchdowns. So I'm not that concerned that there's not a high implied team total for New York this week. What I'm more concerned about is that New York is a heavy, heavy underdog. That means Shane Vereen could see a lot of love through the air. Back in week one, New York was smoked. Dallas destroyed them, and that was without Odell Beckham. In that game, Shane Vereen was targeted 10 times. It was garbage day for Shane Vereen. He was a garbage time hero in that game. With so few options in the Giants receiving game, Shane Vereen might be used even more than he usually would. And then on top of that, there's going to be this massive negative game script. Football is football, and we've seen crazy things happen, but again, I would be shocked if Denver doesn't win this game. The Giants are an absolute mess right now. So I think in PPR leagues, Vereen is going to give you a pretty good floor this week. I don't think he has a crazy high ceiling, but he'll definitely be a decent flex option in full PPR formats. I also like Jerick McKinnon this week, who played more snaps than Latavius Murray last week. I'll get to that in a second, against Green Bay. And then I also like Tevin Coleman this week against Miami. One running back who's been really good the last couple of weeks is LeGarrette Blount, but I'm a little bit worried about him here in week six. Only Leonard Fournette has more rushing yards than LeGarrette Blount over the last 2 weeks. But Blount has played fewer than 40% of Philadelphia snaps in each of those two games. Positive game scripts have really been LeGarrette Blount's best friend. The Eagles have dominated their opponents the last 2 weeks. As a result, LeGarrette Blount has carried the ball 21 times in the second half alone in those two games, versus 9 in the first half of the games. He's accumulated over 76% of his rushing yards in the second half. He's been playing the role that LeGarrette Blount loves to play. He's the closer. That's what LeGarrette Blount is. The Eagles, though, are on the road this week in Charlotte, and they're underdogs against the Panthers. And Carolina has an above-average rush defense. That could mean a much lower ceiling for LeGarrette Blount this week. You know, I just talked about Jerick McKinnon as a start, and his teammate, Latavius Murray, I think is an obvious sit this week. This past week was the first time that we saw this backfield without Dalvin Cook this year, and Latavius Murray played 31% of the team snaps, while Jerick McKinnon saw 67% of them. Jerick McKinnon saw more touches than Latavius Murray both on the ground and through the air. Now, after the Dalvin Cook injury happened, the consensus thought that Latavius Murray was going to be the early down back, and Jerick McKinnon had more PPR upside. I think that can still be the case. We don't know for sure that Jerick McKinnon's going to see more early down work for the rest of the season than Latavius Murray, especially given his size. But Jerick McKinnon certainly has more upside than Latavius Murray does in this backfield. He's the pass catcher. In PPR formats, Jerick McKinnon is going to be very interesting. He's at least a flex play each week. But when there's a negative game script, we should be worried about Latavius Murray. And that's what could happen this weekend. There could be a negative game script. They're playing against Green Bay. That's why I'm worried about Latavius Murray this week. I also wouldn't be playing Wayne Gallman against Denver. I think that's pretty obvious. That whole entire offense is a mess. And I think Shane Vereen's going to see the field over him if that negative game script hits. And then Isaiah Crowell. I don't think you can trust Isaiah Crowell right now or moving forward. At wide receiver, I really like Golden Tate this week. He's tallied just 160 receiving yards over his last four games, but the volume has generally been there for him. He's averaging 7 targets per game. The Lions are going to New Orleans, and they're facing what is an underrated secondary for New Orleans. They have some good cornerback pieces, but New Orleans has also been throwing Kenny Vaccaro in the slot with Sterling Moore sidelined, and he's been dreadful according to Pro Football Focus. Of all slot corners, he's allowed the third worst passer rating while giving up 9 catches on 13 targets and a touchdown this season. So in what could be a potential negative game flow for this Lions team, Golden Tate could see a lot of volume, and if he sees a lot of volume, especially in the slot, he has a great matchup to exploit that. I really like DeSean Jackson this week as well. Number 2 wide receivers have had a field day against Arizona this year, as Patrick Peterson has kind of put the clamps down on opposing number 1 wide receivers. And that's because secondary wide receivers against Arizona see Justin Bethel in coverage. He's now allowed the 5th most receiving yards in the league, according to PFF. Last week, Nelson Agholor and Torrey Smith both ranked as top 20 wide receivers in fantasy football. Back in week 3, Bryce Butler outscored Dez Bryant. And in week 1, Kenny Galladay had a coming out party and he was a top 5 wide receiver. Number 2 wide receivers can do a lot of work against Arizona. This is part of the reason why 2 weeks ago I talked about DeSean Jackson being a buy in my 15 transactions column and podcast. He had a good week last week and I expect him to have another good week this week. I also think Devin Funchess is going to continue to roll. The Eagles have faced the highest drop back to run ratio this season in the entire league, and that's allowed wide receivers to be very good in fantasy football against them. They've allowed the 4th most fantasy points to the position, and according to PFF, their top outside corners rank in the top 14 in yards allowed this season. And Devin Funchess has been a beast without Greg Olsen in the lineup. He's seen 27 targets over the last 3 games for 181 yards and 3 touchdowns, and over this time, he's captured more than 31% of Carolina's red zone targets. He makes for a very good play once again this week. If Marcus Mariota goes, I really like Rishard Matthews this week. He's seen a nice target market share. He just hasn't put it all together. And then Adam Thielen in the slot against Green Bay has a very good matchup as well. I talked about Amari Cooper being a buy candidate earlier this week on the 15 Transactions podcast, but I don't think that he's a good start this week. Not only are there question marks around Derek Carr's health, but Cooper has seen around 17% of the team's targets over the last few weeks while totaling just 23 yards. The matchups haven't been a cakewalk. That's what I talked about earlier this week, but this week's matchup isn't that good either. He's going up against Trevor Williams, who's allowed the 4th worst passer rating against him this season. We just have to see Amari Cooper be a competent fantasy wideout before we can use him. And Sammy Watkins is in the same boat. I don't know how you can confidently play Sammy Watkins this week. He has a 12.12% target market share in his offense. Benny Fowler and Ryan Grant have higher target market shares in their offense than Sammy Watkins does. I sound like a broken record because I talk about this every week, but Sammy Watkins is not getting volume. And even though Sean McVay has said we want to get him more involved, I don't know how you can trust Sammy Watkins against the best secondary in football, which is Jacksonville. So no, I would not be playing Sammy Watkins this week. I'm also not a big fan of Jeremy Maclin. I don't think he's going to see a lot of volume this week despite having a decent matchup. And then you can't play any of the wide receivers for the Giants. Don't play any wide receivers for the Giants. Please, I'm begging you. At tight end, I like Austin Seferian Jenkins again. He's yet to play fewer than 76% of New York snaps since he returned from his suspension, and in the 3 games that he's played, he's been targeted on more than 21% of the Jets' passes. Those are great peripheral numbers for a tight end. And on top of that baseline, he's going up against a New England D that's struggled all over the field this season. And there should be a negative game script. There should be a lot of passing for the Jets. That will benefit the pass catchers. I think he has a nice floor this week, and then naturally, if he finds the end zone, then he's going to have a good ceiling too. And I think that's entirely possible. I also like Zach Miller against Baltimore. Zach Miller led Chicago pass catchers in week 5 with 7 targets, and remember, that was the first game that Mitchell Trubisky started in the NFL. And that was a neutral game script. I know that I talk about game script so much, and it's probably so annoying, but it's important to look at things this way. In a neutral game script, Zach Miller was usable. In a negative game script, he might be even more usable. He's going up against Baltimore. Baltimore hasn't been good against the tight end position. I know a lot of that's skewed because Mercedes Lewis went bonkers against them in London, but they also haven't played many good tight ends this year. They have 2 good corners, and that will force the ball to the middle of the field a bit. We have to look at the tight end position that way and see how quarterbacks are funneling their targets. Baltimore's a team where you can kind of take advantage of that. I like Zach Miller as a streamer this week. I also like George Kittle again. He's running a lot of routes, as I mentioned on Tuesday. I think he's in a good spot against Washington. And then Delanie Walker, especially if Marcus Mariota goes, I like him a lot against Indianapolis. I don't love Jared Cook this week against the Chargers. For as disappointing as the Chargers defense has been this year, they've really done well against the tight end position. Evan Ingram didn't have a single catch last week, and Travis Kelce back in week 3 had just 1 yard when facing them. This could be completely random, because it's not as though the matchups against the Chargers for tight ends should be that scary. So this could be completely random. That's fine. I'm openly admitting that. But it's not like Jared Cook is a must start. It's not like we're talking about Rob Gronkowski here. Considering he's a fringe starter to begin with, I think this is enough to get you off of him. Another tight end that I don't like this week is Jesse James going up against Kansas City. But that's about it at the tight end position. It's a disaster. On defense, I mentioned them in the 15 transaction show. Love Atlanta going up against Miami. The Dolphins have by far the worst offense in the league by any metric imaginable. The Falcons are 11.5 point favorites, and if things go their way, we could end up seeing a ton of passes from Jay Cutler. That means a lot of interceptions and a lot of sacks. The Falcons are an easy streaming defense this week. I also love the Texans against Cleveland, even though DeShone Kizer is not starting. And I like Baltimore a ton against that Chicago offense and Mitchell Trubisky, who will be on the road for the first time this year. On the opposite end, I hate the Steelers against Kansas City. You know, the Steelers' defense has actually been better than the offense this year. The Steelers' defense ranks 8th according to NumberFire metrics this season. But you should not be playing the Steelers' defense in Kansas City against a Kansas City offense that's turned the ball over once this season. Remember Kareem Hunt's fumble? Remember when he fumbled in week 1 and everyone's like, oh, Kareem Hunt's going to be a bust? That's the only time they've turned the ball over this year. Do not play Pittsburgh's defense this week. And this is obvious too, don't play the Lions against New Orleans in New Orleans. And I don't really love the way the Cardinals defense is playing either. They were torched last week and they're going up against Tampa Bay, who we know has a good offense. I know that Tampa Bay can turn the ball over at times, but I'm not in love with the Cardinals defense this week. That'll do it for this week's show though. Thanks everyone for tuning in. If you've yet to subscribe to the show, do so by going to iTunes, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Google Play, and Stitcher. And like I've been saying, we're going to be giving out a free NumberFire premium subscription each month. And we'll do the same for October. All you have to do is go to iTunes, leave a rating and review for the show, and I'll draw a name at random at the end of the month for a free NumberFire premium subscription for an entire year. Also, don't forget to follow me on Twitter, @LateRoundQB. Thanks, everyone. I'll talk to you tomorrow with the weekly mailbag episode.